London's LBC 97.3. 0870 90 90 973.
Nick Abbott.
So they certainly did get their money's worth from that sandwich, didn't they? London radio stations have been talking about nothing else all day. Talk about great publicity. What's it, 85 quid for... How do you pronounce it? Foie gras? Yeah, something like that. Close. No seagull. They're not going to be selling that. They'll sell... they'll put it on the menu for 1 week and then take it off. Because everyone has been talking about that's the shop that they're selling it in. Which I won't mention again. Harrods. For balance, right? Let's go with, I'm talking about restaurants. A Chinese restaurant boss has been fined £15,000 after inspection found mice nesting among the dinner plates, cockroaches in kitchen strainers, and a shoe in spice containers. Nice. Oh, excuse me. Hygiene officers also found mice droppings on work surfaces and cockroaches in storage boxes when they went to this restaurant in Chinatown. They were so appalled that it was closed down immediately after the raid in March last year. However, it's reopened. What do you think, boys? Table for three? But that's not all. This just came out today. More than 20,000 London restaurants, cafes and food shops were caught breaking food standards agency rules in 1 year, figures show today. 20,000 in London alone. Council enforcement officers across the capital uncovered a litany of wrongdoings, including restaurant kitchens infested with rats, grime-encrusted equipment being used to prepare and serve meals, and the food on sale well past its sell-by date. The borough with the highest number of enforcements, Westminster, which covers the West End. Council staff uncovered almost 2,000 breaches of the guidelines, which were designed to ensure public safety between April 2004 and March last year. Kensington and Chelsea discovered 1,677 breaches, Hammersmith and Fulham just over 1,000. The only borough to have none at all, Lambeth. Zero. None. Every other borough had hundreds, if not thousands. Lambeth, zero.
Really?
This is only explained in one of two ways. Either the food in Lambeth is beyond reproach. Better than at the Savoy itself. Or they just didn't check. Which do we think?
I'm not saying.
Hands up who think it's beyond reproach, the food in Lambeth. And now hands up who thinks that it's because they just didn't check. Well, it's overwhelming.
Does it say how many rats?
Yeah, what, in Lambeth?
Well, no, sort of like in Westminster. When you said 2,000, I thought you were going to say rats.
Apparently there's a rat per person, isn't there? There's one rat per person in London.
And you're never more than 6 feet away.
6 feet away, yeah.
You see, everyone knows that, but I'm sure it's not true.
Well,
all right, well, where's the rat now? Where we are? Three floors up.
That's an excellent point.
You know, that means that there's a rat in the middle of here or something.
It must be Alex.
It could be, actually.
Let's go with the London Borough of Yorkshire. Hello, Sean.
Hi, Nick.
How are you?
Yeah, not so bad. I've been wearing glasses. I'm short-sighted for about 20 years, and I'm thinking about having corrective eye surgery, the old laser malarkey. And I know that you used to wear contact lenses. I was wondering if you have any advice on which type of surgery to have.
I'll tell you what I think, but don't take it as advice, because if I say that it's advice, then if it all goes wrong, you can sue me later.
Okay, I won't.
My advice is, don't have it done. Don't have any surgery done that you don't absolutely have to have done, right?
Really?
Beyond that, it's the best thing I ever did. And I wish that I'd done it at least 10 years before, but if I had, it would have been, I would have been more of a pioneer. And there's one thing that you don't want to be, as we've learnt lately, is that you don't want to be a pioneer as far as medical procedures go.
Well, that's the thing. I've spoken to, well, four people now who've had the operation, and have said exactly that, kind of, you know, oh, you know, it's great, wish I did it sooner. But, you know, it's blasting lasers on your eyes and...
Well, when you go into when you go and see the doctor, you'll notice one thing more than any other: that everybody who's working there is wearing glasses. They don't even wear contact lenses. They don't believe in their own product.
Yeah.
For one very good reason is that they see all the things that go wrong. If you go into any hospital eye department. Everyone in there is wearing glasses, because they've got a constant stream of people all day long whose contact lenses have furred up, and their eyeballs have turned back into their heads, and their laser surgery has gone wrong, and their eyes have exploded. It's just awful. And so if that's what you see all day long, you don't want anything to do with it, so you wear glasses, right? Which was a pretty disconcerting thought that when I went in there, that the guy who was doing it was wearing half-moon glasses. And I thought, well, you know, if this is so great, how come you haven't had it done? But that's the reason why, is because they see it, they see all the things that go wrong. And things, if it can go wrong, it will go wrong. But it might not go wrong for you. It didn't go wrong for me. When I get my eyes tested, as I do every now and again, they're surprised that I've had the surgery, because they say it's the best result they've ever seen, which means that everybody else they've seen had a worse result than me.
Right.
And my vision isn't perfect. It's like when, at night time, I will wear glasses just to sharpen things up a bit. In daytime, I don't need them. In fact, wearing glasses is a detriment to my sight, because it's like looking through dirty glass, even though it's not dirty. Do you know what I mean? It's like putting a barrier in the way.
Yeah.
But at night, or going to the cinema or something like that, I do need things to be just sharpened up a bit. So it's not perfect. So in other words, not perfect is the best result they've ever seen. So think about that. However, on the other hand, you wake up in the morning and you don't have to fumble and put your glasses on.
Well, this is the thing. It's going to if it's not glasses, it's your contacts. I wear contacts when I go out on an evening, because...
And they're a nightmare, right? Because as soon as you go into a smoky, warm, dry atmosphere, you're blinking like you're demented.
That's it. So it's more of a social, and, you know, I don't really want to be faffing around.
And when you're having sensual relations, do you take the lenses out first or afterwards? Because if you take them out first, then you can't see what you're doing, right?
Well, you don't want to miss the show.
Exactly. Unless you've made a mistake and you do want to miss the show.
you sleep with them in and you wake up and you think...
That's right. You can't actually... It's as though somebody's applied sandpaper directly to your eyeballs.
And about 8 years ago, I used to have the non-disposable contacts. So I had to kind of carry around in a test.
Yeah, Boots the chemist. You have like a lens cleaner and soaking solution. And, oh, I know, nightmare. You need a dedicated bag.
It's not very hip, is it? If you're a guy in a nightclub with a bag.
It's with a bag over your shoulder. No, you look like a fool. However, if it goes well, it's the best thing you'll ever do.
Right.
It also will be the most painful if it was anything like mine. I think there's two things that they do now. Maybe they only do the one thing now, because what I had done was incredibly painful. Do you want me to talk you through it?
Was it the laser or the cutting and...
Well, there's two... I can't remember the technical name for them, but the newer one is called the Flap and Zap. Flap and Zap, where they cut. They cut like a half moon. You know when you open a tin can and you go all the way around but leave one little bit that's still attached to the body of the can, so you can pull back the lid without detaching the lid from the can.
Yeah.
Exactly that principle. They cut around and then they pull back the front of your eyelid, because you can't put the laser on the front of your eyeball, because that's actually skin. It's see-through skin on the front of your eye.
It's cornea.
I don't know. Let's not get technical, because I'll make mistakes and people will start calling in saying, oh, you got that wrong. But basically, it's too tough for the laser to go through. Because for the laser to go, to be strong enough to get through that tough skin, once it got through, it would burn a hole straight through your head. So they can't do that. That would be a mistake. So they have to get rid of the front of the skin on the front of your eye, and then use, you know, not the kind of laser that they were going to slice James Bond in half with, but something much weaker than that. And then they reshape the front of your eye, and then they put the top of the tin can back. And then it seals up, because then you've only got like a tiny little cut to seal up, right? What they did with me was much worse. Are you ready?
Go on.
First, they put drops in your eye to numb it, so that you can't actually feel the pain. And to make sure that you can't feel the pain anymore, they poke your eye with the end of a stick. And when they do that, you get a visual effect. Things, that your entire visual sensation gets, it's almost like some sort of video effect. Your whole world goes strange, like
it's kind of when you get, if you press on your, close your eyes and press on your eyes, you see this kind of psychedelic sparkly images.
Can I recommend you don't do that?
Yeah.
But no, because you've got your eyes...
So when you rub your eyes.
Yeah, I know, I get what you mean. But no, this is when your eyes are open, and he pokes your eye with a stick, and so... So you're, everything goes funny. So the squares aren't square anymore, they're suddenly, like, round, and, you know, because you're pushing the lens.
You sure the optician wasn't just bored?
Just having a laugh, yeah. So anyway, they do that, and they make sure you're numb, comfortably numb. Then they sit you in a chair that looks like it was manufactured for torture. And you're alone in the room, and every fibre of your body is screaming, get me out of here.
Right.
It does look like, it kind of looks like you're on the set of Mastermind, except you're lying down. It's all dark, apart from this one chair and this gigantic machine that looks like... It looks like something that they'd use for an alien autopsy. Anyway, the bloke with the half-moon glasses comes in, and you've got this thought in, just screaming in your mind, if he's wearing glasses, what the hell am I doing here? And then he puts you in, and he brings the machine over your face, and he says, look in here and look at this red, tiny little red light, and don't move your eyes. Now, if you've ever tried to look at something and focus on it and not move your eyes, it is impossible.
Right.
For two reasons. First of all, you just want to move your eyes around. And secondly, you have to move your eyes around. It's an uncontrollable reflex action, because if you don't, then you stop seeing. It's like if you touch yourself right now. Can you do that for me?
Doing it now?
Put your finger on a part of yourself, of your own choosing, and just leave it there. And after a while, you can't feel it anymore, right?
Right.
And everybody through the glasses is touching themselves. Well, it's true. Because after a while, you're used to that sensation, so you don't feel it anymore, right?
Right.
Same thing with your eyes. So they're always jittering, even if you think you're looking at a single... point of light, you're not. Your eyes are moving back and forward, otherwise you can't see it anymore. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, kind of.
So, and I know that, and so I'm thinking, how am I going to stop my eyeballs from moving? So that's what you have to do, because if you start to look away, which you think that you will do, and the laser will start burning the wrong part of your eye, and then, presumably, like if you... like, say you've got a block of wood,
yeah,
and you chisel into the wrong bit, you're going to have to sand the whole thing down and start again, right? And you don't want that.
It already sounds to me.
And so, this is what you're going to have to go through.
Right.
And so then he says, right, look at this red light, and depending on how bad your vision is, how bad's your vision? What's your diopter?
Minus, 3 points.
Okay, well, that's not bad. They say, but more than minus four, then you're, it's a borderline. So you have to look at this thing for, what, 20, 25 seconds without moving your eyeballs. Try it at home. It's impossible. And then they start the laser. And it's just a thing that flickers. It's kind of, and it clicks. And you suddenly smell the smoke of your burning eyeball.
Was it a nice smell?
I love the smell of burning eyeball in the morning. It's awful.
Right, so is it like singed hair? But not?
Well...
Like bacon, I guess.
Tastes like chicken. it's absolutely horrific.
Right.
And then it stops. And then the real fun begins. He puts a couple of drops in and gives you pills that look like you'd give them to a horse. They're gigantic. They're painkillers. They don't work at all. You go home and you lie down in a darkened room. And then for the next 48 hours, you're in more pain than you could possibly put into words. It's staggering. But that was the thing that they did to me. Because I didn't get the flap and zap. What they did to me to remove the skin on the front of your eye was, we took what looked like a tiny little, you know those whisks that you beat an egg with? It's like a metal rod with a circle on the end of it. Okay, well instead of a big circle, this was a tiny little one. And he scraped the front of my eyeball off with it. While I was looking at him doing it. Still want to go and have your eyes lasered?
I might go for the...
glasses. Yeah, good choice. This is 97.3 LBC.
London's LBC 97.3. 0870-9090-973. Nick Abbott.
So this was in the paper the other day, and I wonder if this is still true. Rattles Jose pulls out of Parky Chat. Chelsea boss Jose Mourinho has pulled out of TV's Parkinson after his team got championship jitters. This was in the paper before the matches on Saturday. No, Sunday it was. It was a big day on Sunday, wasn't it? Jose predicted his team would have won the title by now and would have had a perfect stage to gloat about it on Michael Parkinson's show next to Saturday. But Chelsea's lead over Man U at the top of the Premiership has been cut from 17 points to just 7 in a matter of weeks. So with nothing to celebrate... the Portuguese coach, who dubbed himself the special one. What a dope. The special one. Who would come up with a name like that? I mean, that's just silly, isn't it? Silly man. Has sidestepped potentially embarrassing questions from Michael Parkinson. Maybe he hasn't seen his show. Potentially embarrassing questions. So, Jose, can you tell me what makes you so fantastic? You're so handsome and smart. What is your secret? You really are great. How do you do it? And now here's my next guest, Billy Connolly. Here's Catford. Hello, Larry.
Hello. Hello. Hello.
Here's one in Sutton. Solomon.
Hello.
Hey, Solomon.
How you doing?
All right. What's up, Solomon?
Just ringing to say hello. Just what I told you about my brother's restaurant in Lambeth.
Has it been shut down lately?
No, doesn't get shut. I've had first-hand experience of the health and food hygiene in Lambeth.
Oh yeah, go on.
They do strike fear into all the restaurateurs in Brixton. I can remember one particular morning when he came in. They come in unannounced.
Yeah.
And there was ham and cheese on the same shelf in the refrigerator.
Right.
He was absolutely livid. Absolutely livid. Because of cross-contamination and so forth.
And what did he do about this?
Well, he didn't really do... He just said if he ever sees that again, he will shut shop down.
And when was that?
A couple of years ago,
right. Because this thing that just came out, where Lambeth came up with zero... And I'll throw it on the floor here. One moment, please. 20,000 London restaurants, cafes and food shops were caught breaking Food Standards Agency rules in 1 year. This is the year just over.
Yeah.
In London. None of which were in Lambeth. Every other part of London had hundreds, if not thousands, of enforcement actions. Lambeth, zero. How is that possible?
It is possible, because they're very good at their job.
Oh, get out. Who are?
These health and food hygiene inspectors, they are very good at their job, and, you know, they make it clear that when they come round, they'll pick on everything.
Nonsense. That's simply not possible. If every single other part of London has hundreds or thousands of enforcement actions, how can Lambeth possibly have none?
I believe that to be correct.
Well, I don't doubt that it's correct, but it can. But do you think it's correct? But you're saying it's correct because they're doing such a fantastic job that people who cook and serve food in Lambeth aren't doing anything wrong. That's just silly.
It's silly. I mean, when it comes in, there are certain things that they find that they're not happy with. You know, they give you a couple of days to sort it out, and they come back. Other than that, if you know anything major, then they do come down on you like a ton of bricks. They don't mess about.
Well, apparently they do, because they haven't come down on anyone like a ton of bricks. They haven't enforced any actions on anybody in Lambeth. That's none at all. That's impossible. Either everyone in Lambeth is serving, is being legal, decent, honest and true in the food business, or they just haven't gone out and checked, or they're letting everyone off. Three possibilities.
Three possibilities, yeah. Well, you know, I've had first-hand experience of them, and they're all very good. I mean, the same food and hygiene inspectors actually eat at our shop.
Now, see, but they get access to the kitchen, don't they?
Yeah, they do, yeah.
See, the rest of us poor mugs, we just have to sit out front and...
Oh, no, not in our problem. Not in my proper shop, you can see the kitchen. If you wanted to go around the back, there's some tables around the back where you can see the kitchen working.
Yeah, I quite like that you can see, you can go to places and actually see them spitting into the soup, whatever it is.
It's always full up at the back, so, you know, people seem to like that.
Anyway, you said you wanted to talk about your restaurant.
It's not mine, it's my brother's. That is the restaurant.
you wanted to talk about it, in other words, talk about it like an advert?
Like an advert. I don't need advertising. It's always busy.
Right.
It's always busy. It's always packed. So it doesn't need advertising. I mean, if you have a fancy coming down, just tell them you'll be there, and they'll give you a free breakfast.
A free breakfast?
A free breakfast.
How can you get yourself together to get out of the house without having breakfast first? Brunch. Can we make it brunch?
Make it brunch.
There you go.
You enjoy it.
It's a deal.
Okay, then, mate.
All right, thanks a lot, mate.
Thank you, mate. Good night.
Ta-ta. This is LBC 97.3. What have we got? We've got Peckham and Waltham Cross and Millill and Hornchurch and Ashford. Electric Parade. Where's that?
I don't know. I think she makes it up.
Is the name made up as well?
Possibly.
Tallulah.
That's quite a long history behind that.
What does that mean?
Well, that she's one of Clive's regular people, and he renamed her because he didn't like her original name.
Why can't I get her?
I was going to say, you're having trouble there.
Yeah, can you do it for me? Buttons.
There we are. How's that?
Tallulah.
Hey. Hello. Hello, Nick. I heard the history about me. Is it a book?
I don't know. You'll have to tell me. What is the history with you?
Well, your producer just told you.
Well, not very much.
Okay, he did not tell you very much. But, well, altogether, it was, I'm a real person. And Clive didn't like my name, so we made up a new name.
What's your real name, Tallulah?
Tallulah. I'm not telling you, because I'm incognito. Because I have to hide from a famous family tree.
She has to hide from a famous family tree.
Just leave it with Tallulah. That should be fine, because we don't want to destroy the whole magic.
It's not a family name beginning with H, is it?
The family name starts with an S.
An S?
Yeah, it's to do with two male guitarists.
A male guitarist beginning with S. Can you hang on there a moment, Tallulah? Just take a breath and hang on there one... I'll have to ponder this. A male guitarist beginning with S. Hmm. Any ideas?
Nick Abbott. 0870-9090-973.
I'm coming up with nothing, Tallulah. A famous guitarist beginning with... whose second name begins with S.
No, they're not famous anymore.
They're not famous anymore.
No. Well, that's just a band called Scorpions that have been playing last week.
Scorpion?
Yeah.
They're famous.
Yeah, Scorpions, yeah.
And, right. And so you have a relative who's in Scorpion?
My brother, Scorpions, yeah, he made the band. He's the founder.
And what's his name?
Schenker. Rudolf Schenker.
Michael? No.
Yeah, Michael Schenker.
Michael Schenker.
Yeah, with UFO, and that's where I like LBC, because...
We play a lot of Scorpion. Yeah, you're right. No. Wall to Wall.
No, because...
When we're not playing Magnum Michael and Striper, mm. we're playing, Michael Schenker. Mm, no. He's great. Yngwie Malmsteen, there's another one.
Yeah. It was his first record company, it was Christmas. With UFO.
Right.
Mm. But actually, I wanted to talk about something really boring.
Even more boring. Right.
Even more boring.
Go on, then.
I watched this thing with Rolf Harris when he painted the picture.
Yes, painful, right?
And when the whole thing started, I thought, he is so nervous. Will he be able to do magic? That was my first question. When I saw him in front of the Queen, I thought, that's not possible. He's too nervous. He won't be able to do magic. And it was painful for the whole thing, yeah.
How did she get into the position where she was strong-armed into doing this? I mean, no fibre in her body wanted to actually be there, surely?
No, absolutely not. Exactly. There was body language, was speaking more than words and pictures, colours, whatever.
So it must have been a PR department, which must be staffed with hundreds of people, who said, oh, you know what, the people love Rolf Harris. And she said, Rolf who? They said, don't worry about it, dear. It'll be great. The people will love you for it. And she said, oh, all right, then I'll give him 5 minutes. And he came up with a painting. Oh, you've got to see it. It's worth £7.50. She must hate that it's in her house.
Yeah, but, I mean, every question she asked him was painfully, developed in her mind. What can I ask him? Because I don't really want to be here, but I want to show that I'm interested. At least that's what came across.
Well, this is a woman who just asks strangers, she just chit-chats with strangers for a living. And this is all that she does.
Well, but I've been standing in front of the Queen with one of my budgies. And the budgie was sticking out of the crowd in my hand, and the Queen was so stunned to see this budgie among the crowd. I was talking to her, and she completely ignored me, so to speak, just staring at that budgie. So, she does actually, really, she does what she wants, in a sort of a way.
You were in a crowd...
Mm?
Where do I even start? Okay. What was the occasion?
Oh, you'll be there. The jubilee.
The jubilee.
The jubilee?
Right, and so you'd elbowed your way to the front. You must have been in there for, 3 days, waiting for a good position?
Well, not really. It was not really one of those very highly visited parts.
And you took your parrot with you?
My budgie, and it was actually pre-arranged with the newspaper, because they were there as well, so I have got a fantastic shot with me and with the budgie and the Queen having a good look at the budgie. And then Prince Philip came around, saw the whole thing and said, well, the budgie doesn't seem to mind at all. And that was absolutely the right...
Well, so did you have hold of the budgie? Were you holding its legs so it wouldn't fly away or what? Was it in a cage or
that budgie,
box?
That budgie was not able to fly anymore because it was that budgie that was injured when very young.
Oh.
Well, it was okay.
So
he enjoyed it. When we come home, he said, I saw the Queen!
The budgie did.
No, that was a bit of fun. But he used to say, God save the Queen.
The budgie does.
Yeah. And she got the recording because I made songs with the budgie, and she sent me a letter back where she said,
don't ever contact me again.
No, the other way around. She said, it's fantastic, the loyal words spoken by your budgerigar Sammy. I'm just looking at it now.
The Queen didn't say that.
It was written by the Queen, yeah.
Rubbish.
Of course, signed by the lady in waiting.
Yeah, Queen never saw it.
No, she did.
She gets 10,000 letters a week, all of which are signed and replied to.
No, when I met the Queen,
the lady in waiting
was actually there, her name is Susan, whatever. And she actually recognized that picture that I had from her. I mean, the letter, because I took the letter with me in case I need to make proof. And she recognized her letter because it was something they never had before.
Yeah, I could imagine.
Yeah.
Seared on her brain.
Well.
And so what happened to the budgie?
Oh, I've got Sammy the Third right now here in front of me. That was Sammy the Second who met the Queen. Sammy the Third is, the Third.
So the,
And I'm just about to do...
The budgie is no more.
That one, no, because he was very, very badly injured. He could not walk. I bet he was a crippled budgie. But
it's an ex-budgie.
Well, yeah, but the new one is already 3 years old, so it has been quite a while ago.
And it says what?
The new budgie, that he's brilliant. He says, come on!
Well, get it to say something.
Oh, he just had his meal because I would be able to say...
Well, it only speaks when it's hungry.
Well, that is the prompt, the only prompt one. But he's not silly, so he knows he just had his treat and he won't get it again. But it has been...
So really, it only speaks when it's hungry, when you're torturing it.
No, he speaks all day long, but if I want to prompt the budgie to speak...
Yeah.
He will be just maybe near his meal time, and...
And it won't say anything for us now.
Well, I don't... Come on, sorry. No, he just had his meal, so...
Well, you have no budgie there, you're making this up.
Oh, wow. Sammy, I'm sorry, but I should have waited with this meal, but I didn't think it was required.
All right, well, don't feed the parrot.
The budgie?
Till tomorrow. Starve it. Will you do that for me? And then I'll be talking his face off.
No problem. You can have it. Just before I came on air, he said it for me 5 times.
He said so, what?
He says, I love you. Because that's a magic sentence to get his meal. That's just random. Random? I could have made him say, God save the Queen, and that is cool as a random. Whatever. But I'll show it to you tomorrow, okay?
Yeah, okay.
I will be your regular tomorrow, okay?
Right. I literally can wait.
And call me Tallulah, please, okay?
All right, Tallulah. Tara, dear. Out of her mind. Huh, I'm surprised that she hasn't been walked into a field to commit suicide. I mean, the Queen, doesn't she get rid of people that are really like that? Surely. I mean, if I was the Queen, I'd be, there'd be a trail of dead people behind me. It's, LBC 97... You know what? I haven't given out the number once. This, crowd, know this off by heart. Let's go with, Peckham. I can't do it. This happened to me last time. This machine doesn't like me. Can you give me number 9, please? No? Oh, go on. Just for me. Number 9. Huh? Speak to me, Bob.
There we are. It should be there now.
Doesn't say it's there. It says it's still Tallulah.
Are you sure?
Ah. Bingo. Hey, John.
Hello. Can you hear me now?
I can.
I think Tallulah very clearly sort of demonstrates why cannabis shouldn't be legalised.
I'm sure that's not what's happened.
with her, well, with her budgie singing God Save the Queen. Interesting call. But I just need to tell you one thing, though. That, you know that guy, Larry, who called in? You know the one who said, hello, three times?
Yeah.
I've listened to him quite a few times on Clive's show. I'm not sure if that's his real voice or if he's just doing that, you know, as sort of like his other radio voice. But
yeah,
that's how it normally sounds.
It didn't sound real to me.
No, I don't think it does, but sort of Clive has quite sort of detailed conversations with him. But
Well, then he can call back when Clive's on. That's the beauty of only being here for 2 days. I can duck out.
What do you normally do?
I don't do anything.
Really? Oh, you're not a normal LBC presenter then, or not?
No, not at all. Nothing normal about me. Actually, these days I'm normally playing music like Saxon and Magnum and, you know, all that loud stuff that lower last woman was closely related to.
Because when she said a guitarist whose surname began with S, I was on another level. I was thinking of Andrea Segovia, the classical.
Yeah, I think that's, you're way above us. We're on a level way below that.
Oh, no, I'm not above anyone. I'm sort of just, you know, clinging on to gutter level. But anyway.
I couldn't think of anybody at all. And I do it for a living.
Should I have heard
famous of guitarist that begins with S.
Should I have heard of the Scorpions? Because,
well, not really.
It's like you think you know sort of someone, you know, and you think the whole world knows. And like a friend of mine, I talked to him about Stevie Wonder, and he said, who? You would have thought that Stevie Wonder's quite well-known around the world.
Well, that's just flat-out embarrassing. You don't know who Stevie Wonder is.
I had a friend who's a very good musician, very intelligent guy, well, supposedly, sort of academically, and he asked me, not as a joke, seriously, he asked if the Beatles were actually from Liverpool. And I said, where do you think they were from? And he thought they were from London. So,
Well, is this a young person, right?
No, he was in his mid-20s. He works in the city, got quite a good job. And he and people around the table burst out laughing. He said quite a few odd things, like once when we were on a train and it stopped, he said, is this train refueling? And apparently he's got quite a lot of money to his name because of the job he does. But, you know, when he asked me if the Beatles were actually from London, and I said they're opening up a new wing in Heathrow Airport, sort of, you know, the Lennon department, and he said, what?
Well, the Liverpool airport is actually the John Lennon Airport.
Yeah, no, that's why I said it to him, yeah, and he was completely oblivious to it. And then when I told him about the John Lennon Airport, he went, no, stop it. And I know, really, it is.
Which is a great airport because there's nobody there. The only problem with the John Lennon Airport is that it's in Liverpool.
Why have they got all these odd... They've got Bristol Airport as well. I've never known anyone... I know quite a few Americans who sort of, you know, work at Bristol, and when they fly back to America, they come back to, you know, Gatwick or Heathrow. I don't know if all these airports are actually used. There's one in Southampton as well, I think, but...
I think they're used infrequently. I think Stars go into tiny airports around London. They don't actually arrive at Heathrow much. Like really super famous people, they get to like the Royal Family, for instance. They don't fly into Heathrow. They go into I don't know where. But it's, you know, because they don't want to be surrounded by awful people carrying budgies.
Asking if the train needs to be refueled at the stop, but. No, I just phoned in to talk about contact lenses, but...
But no, you're right about the Beatles thing, because, I mean, you think it's general knowledge, but you talk to somebody who's younger, and of course they didn't live through the Beatles times, so you think, well, why should they actually know that?
Yeah, but, I mean, some of the things that I don't know, I thought I've got fairly good knowledge. I didn't know what IBM stood for, and a friend asked me, and when I said I don't know, he sort of looked at me in a shocked way, as if I asked him who George Bush was.
I don't know what IBM stands for. What does IBM stand for?
International Business Machine. I didn't know that, and he looked at me and he said, oh, come on, Dev, I presume that was common knowledge.
Well, is this the same nerd who didn't know where the Beatles come from?
No, this is another guy.
Different nerd, right.
This is a different nerd. When I was 18, he asked me who Alan Greenspan was, and I didn't know.
I bet 90% of this audience don't know who Alan Greenspan is.
And this is the same nerdy guy, not the one who asks...
Is he American?
The nerdy guy is, yeah, the one who doesn't know about the Beatles, he's from here.
See, there's no reason why we should know who Alan Greenspan is in this country.
He said,
But we should know where the Beatles come from, that's just plain silly. I mean, what's more important, money or music?
Or in the Beatles' case, money
and music, yeah. They're just opening a show in Las Vegas. How much money does Paul McCartney need?
is he playing again?
No, I don't think so. They're just, they're doing one of these silly shows that's based around their music. Billy Joel's got one coming out, Rod Stewart had one, and they did one on Buddy Holly. ABBA, of course, have got a really successful
Rod
show.
Rod Stewart as well?
Yeah, did I not say Rod Stewart?
Oh, did you say Rod Stewart?
I think so, yeah. I said it in my brain, I don't know whether I said it out loud. That happens a lot with me.
Really?
Anyway, listen, I've got to go, but thanks
okay.
a lot, mate. Ta-ra. Thanks,
bye-bye.
LBC 97.3.
LBC 97.3 0870 90 90 973. Nick Abbott.
Talking of people who are out of their minds, did you read this story? This is incredible. A man took 40,000 ecstasy pills in a 9-year period, doctors revealed the other day. Did you hear about that?
No.
It's believed to be the largest amount of MDMA, the active ingredient, consumed, and beats the previous known lifetime intake of 2,000 tablets. Doctors from the Addiction Centre in St George's Medical School in Tooting said that the 37-year-old man stopped taking the drug 7 years ago but still suffers severe physical and mental side effects. No kidding. There's a surprise.
Just say no.
Just say no thank you.
Well, okay.
I mean, good manners don't cost nothing.
Yeah, I know, but if you're being offered that sort of stuff, I think you should be a bit more rude.
No, don't be rude, because they'll shoot you.
Well, maybe. I could send them a nice cheery email so that they knew I wasn't being
Don't put a smiley face on the end of it, though, because they'll think that's a come-on.
Just say no, smiley face.
These include, side effects include extreme memory loss, paranoia, hallucinations and depression. Hey, I get that. He also has painful muscle I'm having difficulty saying this because of the painful muscle rigidity in my face, which he gets too, surprisingly, in his neck and jaw, which can prevent him opening his mouth.
Don't do it.
Doctors fear many of these problems will be permanent. The man known as Mr. A, and I think we know what the A stands for, in a report in the scientific journal Psychosomatics, started using ecstasy when he was 21. At first he took an average of 5 pills a weekend, which seems like an incredible amount, doesn't it? 5 pills? You've got no idea what they are. You've bought them from some bloke in a mask in an alleyway, with a dog on a leash, and a gun in his pocket. Probably not. Probably bought them from his mates in a club.
Do you think that's how he started out? What, with 5 the very first time?
Well, I don't know. That's what it says here. Mr. A took an average of 5 pills in a weekend. At the peak, he took, guess how many, a day? 25. That's incredible. You can't have 25 cups of tea a day. He took 25 a day for 4 years. And he was a dentist. No. I made that bit up. Following several severe collapses at parties, Mr. A decided to stop taking the drug and for several months still felt under the influence of it. Good grief. I mean, you'd have to be out of your mind, wouldn't you?
Oh, you would be by then.
Doctors discovered the man was suffering from all sorts of everything. A consultant psychiatrist said it's an extreme case, but could indicate that ecstasy can lead to irreversible problems. No, it can't. It means that taking 25 a day can lead to irreversible problems. You know what? If you took 25 aspirins a day, you'd die.
Yeah.
If you took 25 espressos a day, you'd probably die.
Yes.
Can you think of anything that's got some kind of drug in it that you could take 25 a day of and still be like a functioning, walking human being? Anything at all. You can take 25 vitamin pills a day.
Lockets.
And I'm sure it says right there on the packet, no more than 4 in a 24-hour period.
Something like that, probably.
Well, that's incredible, actually. I mean, you'd have to say that this is a great endorsement for ecstasy.
But we're not endorsing it.
Well, of course not.
Here on LBC 97.3.
No, nor would anybody in their right mind endorse such a thing. However, to take 25 a day
and still be alive
for 4 years and still be alive. I mean, that suggests an extremely low toxicity, doesn't it?
It does, yes.
How is the war on drugs going, by the way?
Very well, apparently.
Yeah, right. Let's go with Hornchurch. Hello, Jeff.
Hi there.
Jeff.
Your conversation about laser eye treatment, I turned on as you were halfway through it, and you were giving this story that sounded like something out of the Hammer House of Horrors or
yes.
Silence of the Lambs. And I had it done 6 years ago, and don't regret a single minute, and didn't suffer anything like the after effects that you said you were suffering. Nothing like it at all. I'm 54 next month, and so I had it done 6 years ago. I'd worn glasses since I was 16. Became very short-sighted. I was -4.5 in one eye, -3.5 in the other eye. A football referee, we won't go down that route, but you can imagine the grief on a football pitch wearing glasses.
Double jeopardy, yeah.
Plus when it absolutely pours down with rain and you can't clear the glasses,
yes.
That sort of thing. And I hummed and hawed over it for quite some time, and I had a legacy left to me by my sister and decided the best way to use that legacy would be to put something back into my health. But I had it, I paid for it to be done privately. I went to do some research and got in touch with Moorfields because obviously your site is valuable, and I felt that if anything was going to go wrong, I wanted to be in the best place to have it done.
And so you had it done at Moorfields?
I had it done privately at Moorfields. I saw a guy called David Gartry, Dr. David Gartry. He was apparently the first guy to do LASIK. There were two treatments, PRK, which was...
Well, you know what? We might have had the same guy, because I can't remember exactly what his qualification was. But he was an old guy who wore half-moon glasses, right?
Well, he wore glasses. I had a conversation with him about the glasses. I actually said to him at the time, because he wouldn't do two eyes at the same time.
No, well, I don't think they do they?
His theory is if you get an infection in one eye and it goes to the other, you're pretty much stuffed for the week.
Yeah.
And I actually said to him, you know, why, when I went back the second week, why haven't you had yours done? He said, well, I could be rather vain and say because no one's as good as me. But he actually said that at that time his eyesight was so poor that the treatment hadn't come about to treat that severity. But he has, in fact, since had it done.
Huh.
But I had my...
Well, he is unusual, because I bet you every other doctor walking around Moorfields is wearing glasses.
Of course. But I had my first one done at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning. I travelled home on public transport on my own. At 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I was over the park kicking a football round with my kids. A week later, went back and had a second one done. Had a little bit of pain, because I felt the slight cut, but I only jerked a little bit. But for the last 6 years, I've had... absolutely fantastic eyesight.
So, did you get what was called the flap and zap?
LASIK is all I know. That may have been the start of when that came.
Well, did they scrape the front of your eyeball off, or did they cut a tin can thing and then peel it back and then put it back again? I bet that's what you had done.
I think it was a cut and flap one.
Yeah. And I've spoken to other people, and it doesn't hurt as much, and you do see well almost straight away, but the pain is involved, and it's a really bad line, so I'm going to have to say thanks a lot and goodbye, Jeff. But
okay.
get a new phone, or go to higher ground, or something like that, but cheers, mate. But the pain was involved with... because they had to scrape... I know this is horrible, you don't want to hear this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Because they had to scrape the front of my eyeball off for the laser to go through, instead of peeling it back. The skin has to regrow. And that was where the pain was involved. You see, it doesn't have to regrow if they just peel it back and then put the skin back again. But if he actually scrapes the front of your eyeball off, and the skin has to regrow, it's more pain than you could possibly put into words. Anybody feeling squeamish? This is LBC 97.3.
Nick Abbott.
Let's go straight into Ashford. Hello, Ken. Oh, Ken. Is there anybody out there? Does that mean that either I've done it wrong or he's not there? What does that mean?
That means that he's not there.
Ah. Can we talk about Noel Edmonds? Do you want to talk about Noel Edmonds or dishwasher tablets?
Dishwasher tablets.
Or should I talk to Jacques?
Maybe you could talk to Jacques first.
Is it Jacques or Jack?
You'll have to ask him.
All right. It doesn't work. Can you do it for me? That machine just flat out doesn't like me. Hey, Jacques.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Yeah, hello, Nick. It's Jacques, by the way, French-sounding. Nick, I'm not Mr. Angry from Tunbridge Wells, but I thought you were a little bit patronising with that lovely lady, Tallulah. You've obviously haven't encountered her before. I've heard her phone in before, and I think she's got a really interesting life, and I think she's anything but a fruitcake.
Hey, you're mixing me up with David Cameron. I didn't call her a fruitcake.
Well, perhaps I shouldn't have used words you didn't, but you alluded to the fact that you thought she was barking, and you finished it off by saying she ought to be taken out into a field and disposed of.
Well, I don't think I went that far. I said, if I was the Queen.
Yes, well, I can just tell you, as an irregular listener to this slot, I have to be driving home now after a long day at the office. I've heard her talk a bit earlier in the evening, and I actually enjoy listening to people like her because she's got a life, unlike perhaps people like me that phone in.
Right, well, she was on for a very long time.
Yes, well, I thought that was good, and I'm glad you gave plenty of air time. But, Nick, I've never met the Queen, and I certainly haven't got a talking budgie. And if I did have a talking budgie, I doubt I'd get to meet the Queen. So I think she should be commended for that, don't you?
Yeah, or something like that. We should give her a medal, or maybe she should be a dame. We should name a train after her.
DAB Digital Radio, London, LBC 97.3.